My daddy served in the army. We lost his right eye, but he flew a flag out in our yard. Till the day that he died, he wanted my mother, my brother, my sister and me to grow up and live happy in the land of the free. Now this nation that I love is falling under attack. A mighty sucker punch came flying in from somewhere in the back. Soon as we could see clearly through our big black eye, man, we lit up your world like the 4th of July.
Greetings and good day to you. My name is Jason Dias. Welcome to The Vigilant American. The name of the show today is King of the Castle. Joining us from the McQueenie Gun Club, his name is Matthew Spalton, and Chris Siegel, the Range Master and Instructor. Hey, gentlemen, how are we doing this morning?
Doing fine, Jason. Doing good.
We prayed for rain in church last Sunday, and man, God was listening because it is raining. This is not your Presbyterian rain. This is a genuine Baptist downpour we got going on. We want to welcome you all to the show. The show is brought to you by the McQueenie Gun Club, and if you want to, while you're there, it is also brought to you by Benelli Firearms. And what distinguishes Benelli from the competition is the ultra reliability and quality. You can go over to the McQueenie Gun Club and get your hands on some of these beautiful Benelli firearms. And if you're at the gun club today, Matthew, you got a special event going on for the Heidi Search Center. Tell us about that.
That's correct. We have the Heidi Search Center coming out and doing an event. Unfortunately, the weather's not really cooperating with us, but we'll power through that. What we're doing is we're donating half of the range time that is sold today to the Heidi Search Center.
Oh, that's awesome. That's a great thing. Heidi Search Center has been around since 1990, so they've been around for a long time. And if you're listening, folks, and you're wondering if you can go out there, you can, because the McQueenie Gun Club is indoors, and you can go and have a great time for a great cause, and everyone will be very, very happy to see you. Some of the outside things may not be happening, obviously, but all the best stuff is on the inside. So get on out to the McQueenie Gun Club today and have a great, great time. Because honestly, you can't do anything else today. Soccer is canceled. Everything else is pretty much canceled. Hey, folks, when we get back from the break, last week we talked about the CHL classes. So let's stay with that chronology. Let's say, hey, you've got your CHL now. Now you've got some pretty awesome responsibilities and rights and to be vigilant and to be aware of your situational awareness. We're going to talk to Chris Siegel and Matt about that today, and we're going to do it all right after this. I'm sorry, Chris, I couldn't resist. We were talking about our time down in South America, so we would blare that song flying over Panama and Panama City and all kinds of crazy places you've never heard of way back when I looked like the Karate Kid, a young man in the 7th Infantry Division doing my thing down in Central America way back when. Hey, Chris, for folks that may not have met you yet, tell us a bit about you and your career.
Former law enforcement. I've spent time with Los Fresnos Police Department down in the valley, Westlake Police Department, Cameron County Constables Precinct 8. I served with the United States Marshals down there for a little bit as a contract peace officer. And then I went up to Nueces County in Corpus Christi, and I was with Nueces County SO. Found out after some years that had some interest in me in the private sector, and I went out into a small corporation in Corpus Christi. We were a competitive business intelligence firm who also did some things for the government, and just had some fun.
That's awesome. Now, is Matt still with us?
Yes, sir.
Hey, Matt. Now, we talked about CHL last week on the show. Once a person gets that CHL, they have a pretty big responsibility, don't they, once they're walking around carrying that concealed handgun, don't they?
They sure do.
And so we're going to talk about that today on the show, being vigilant. And Chris, you mentioned something that I had not really discussed much when we were speaking earlier this week on Wednesday, and you called it the Castle Doctrine. Tell us what that means.
Castle Doctrine is a concept that comes from the philosophy that every person is a king or queen of their home. You know, there's never a need for the monarch of the kingdom to flee the castle before using force against an unlawful intruder. The interesting thing that most people don't realize is that the words Castle Doctrine or Stand Your Ground are nowhere in the legalese of that legislation. It's a concept, not the written word.
Right, right. So basically it means that you have a right to defend your home and your possessions. Is that correct?
Correct. And in Texas, the law extends the, and we're going to keep calling it the Castle Doctrine, it extends that doctrine beyond your residence to include your occupied vehicle and workplace.
Yeah, awesome. I know many Texans have, you guys do CHL classes all the time, so a lot of people get their CHL, and I think a lot of times people, they get it, obviously, to protect themselves and their families. What a lot of people may or may not know is that if you are a CHL holder and you witness a crime, is a CHL holder allowed to intervene if they are witnessing a crime taking place?
Depends on the crime, and it depends on a number of factors, but bottom line is it depends on the crime. You can use force to protect yourself or a third person, and you can use deadly force to protect yourself or a third person.
Right. Now, we talked about this just a little bit last week with Nick. Came out that in the Oregon shooting, close to that scene, there were some, I think, two people that had CHL. And I think what I heard from one was that he was concerned that if he had gone to intervene, that the first responders might have mistaken him for a shooter. And I got to tell you, I'm not sure. Yeah, I'm not sure I buy it. I think maybe perhaps he lost his nerve, and that's why we're going to talk about this today, the situational awareness. In a situation like that where someone is committing an aggravated assault with the firearm, I would think a CHL holder is certainly within their rights to return fire.
Yes, they are, if they can do so without endangering a third person. Because the bottom line is, even if somebody is attacking you, trying to take your life, if you pull that trigger and fire that shot and misses, that bullet goes somewhere. And if it hits little 4-year-old Cindy Lou and injures or kills her, you're going to go to a grand jury for that. And you will go to trial because the attack doesn't justify the negligence of that shot. And that brings us to the mantra that we have here, is that you have to train.
Yeah, just going to say that.
You will not rise to the occasion like they do in the movies. You're not all of a sudden, if you spend all your time punching paper targets at 4 yards from a bench, you know, picking your weapon off the bench, you're not going to all of a sudden develop into a gunslinger or a pistoletto and get those shots off accurately. You have to train. And that's where both civilians and police fall down.
All right. And Matt, I know, Matt, that that's one of the great aspects about the McQueenie Gun Club, that you guys really do stress. Like I said, you have a responsibility once you have that CHL, and you can't shoot, 40, 50 rounds once and expect to be proficient, because in a tactical situation, the person that is about to do you harm or somebody that you love harm is not a paper silhouette hanging from a clip, are they?
Absolutely, and that's why, like I said, we encourage the training, and we offer extended training and things beyond the CHL, the personal protection inside the home, outside the home classes. We also have an advanced CHL class, and then we have the private lessons, and so we really have the whole gamut, and we can offer a bunch of different training options that will suit the individual's needs, and just to stay current with that training, because obviously, like I said, it's not a piece of paper that you're going to be shooting at if you end up in a defensive situation.
Yeah, and I want to also ask you, Matt, for the first time, I guess maybe because I'm doing the show, my wife expressed an interest in the CHL class, and she is, how should I put this, petite. Her hands are rather small. Is there a handgun you might recommend for somebody like my wife who has, A, never, ever fired a handgun, and would certainly probably want to keep it concealed in a purse or a bag? And she is left-handed.
I would recommend the one we went over last week with Nick, the firearm of the week, the SIG 238 or 938. Probably the 238 for your wife would be a good one. It's chambered in 380. It's what my wife carries. It's what my mom carries. I've even got one myself, and sometimes, you know, when I'm out and about, I'll carry it in my front pocket. You never know it's there.
Really?
The nice thing about another option that we have for that gun, we have one on the range. So if someone wants to come in and test one out, they can come and put some rounds down range. And if, when people come in that are first-time shooters, I recommend that they do that and that they get a private lesson. They can go in there with an instructor, and he can show them how to manipulate the firearm and how to do so safely. And they come out of there with a big smile on their face and a whole lot more knowledge than they went in with. So it's a good experience for them, and it makes sure that they can operate everything safely, which is, of course, the most important thing.
Right. And Chris, I wanted to ask you, because you said something that is so true. We all watch television, and we see, Jack Bauer on 24 picking off targets at 100 yards with the Glock, which is all Hollywood, as you know. I do think sometimes it gives people a false sense of security that they're going to know exactly how to react. I personally have seen very, very seasoned and trained, highly trained professional soldiers lose it when the rounds start flying. And so today when we talk about situational awareness, I think a big part of it really is kind of reminding people that this is not a Hollywood movie. The bullets are real, and it's just something that you have to be prepared for once you've made that decision to carry a concealed handgun, correct?
Yes, you have to train for the absolute worst in order to be able to handle what might come your way. Because you can run scenarios through your head all day long, 7 days a week, 4 weeks a month, five, whatever, all year long. But when it actually happens, it's not going to be like your scenario.
Yeah.
A policeman's first rounds at 7 yards or under miss the target 85% of the time. CHL holder's conflict is generally going to happen around 6 feet or under. If you don't have situational awareness, if you don't have your weapon out and there's a gentleman 6 feet away that wants to cut you with a knife, you're going to get cut. You can't react quick enough if you don't have the situational awareness. Situational awareness gives you time. Time allows you to gain space, and it takes you off that threat vector.
Very interesting. I would not have guessed that about law enforcement. Let's talk about some of these situations. These are just some that I was thinking of. For the record, I've actually been held up at gunpoint. I used to work at the Texas Med Clinic when I was in college over in San Antonio, and we were walking out one night, and three young, and I'm not being politically incorrect, this is what they were, three young Hispanic gentlemen rolled up on us and had a shotgun, pushed it right in my stomach and said, give us everything in the bag. I guess they thought we had money, which we didn't have any of. All they got away with was my frozen breakfast tacos and a watch and my change of clothes. But still wasn't much fun being on the business end of that sawed-off shotgun. Now, like an idiot, I ran to my car where I had a little 32 caliber revolver under the seat and proceeded to chase them down Interstate 10. Now, I was not able to catch them, A, because I was in a Hyundai and it didn't go very fast, and there was just too many cars and I lost track of them. It was at 11 o'clock at night. Having been in that situation, had I caught up to them on the road, would it have been illegal to roll down my window, and yes, I would have had to roll it down manually, and just start shooting into their car?
Oh, if you were still in pursuit, in fresh pursuit, it probably would have been legal if you had if you felt that there was no other way to get that property back. But then again, it's a question like the bank robbery that you asked about last week when we were talking. What's your property worth? How many other people are around? What's going to happen the minute you start letting rounds go through your open window into the car next? Where is that car going to go What's the collateral damage going to be? It's a lot of stuff. You can, you know,
and I'll tell you. And I didn't think of any of that. I was just mad. You know, I was just mad. And,
Yeah.
And that's what you mean. Once your adrenaline gets going, your adrenaline often overpowers the sanity section. I mean, that's what training is all about. A sane person turns and runs the other way when the bullets start flying. And if you're a law enforcement official or a CHL holder, a professional soldier, you're actually supposed to stay where you are or move into or towards fire. And that is not usually what human instinct tells you to do. So that's actually a great, great point. And that, and since we're on the bank robbery scenario, that's the one I asked you about. So people that weren't there, I said, let's say I, you know, roll into Frost Bank over on Landis Street, minding my own business. It's a Saturday morning, and I walk in, and there is somebody with a handgun pointed at the teller. And it's obviously not my money, really, but I'm standing behind this person and feel pretty confident that I'm not going to miss from the counter there where you fill out your deposit slip. But you told me that there are some things to take into consideration. Talk to us about that.
It's a gut feeling thing. It's going to be different for everybody. Number one, if you hit that person, even if you hit them center mass, because you're just trying to stop the act, you're not trying to kill them, you're trying to stop the act. If you put a hole in their heart, they still have 4 or 5 seconds that they're going to have function of their extremities. So in order for that scenario to work, you're going to have to flip that switch off immediately. And that's a shot you might miss.
Yep.
Real easily. And quite honestly, most bank robberies aren't violent.
Right.
If there is a whole bunch of people in that bank, do you want to take the chance of irritating that person to where they do start pulling the trigger and the body count goes up? Or do you want to perhaps wait, just take visual, start from the head down to the feet, get the description, put that into memory? Now, of course, if things turn sour, then yes, you need to intervene. If you're a morally supportive or upright person, you should intervene. But
now, I know,
start the dance off without any without the music playing, sometimes you might want to think twice.
That's a great way to put it. Now, ever since we talked about doing this show on Wednesday, I got to tell you guys, I went to the Hofbräu that night, and my wife and I were having dinner, and I was just thinking about this. And I'm just curious, Matt, when you're out and about, when you get to a restaurant or to a movie theater, is part of situational awareness just taking a real quick look around? And do you ever say to yourself, okay, especially I do this all the time now at the movie theater, since that's the new thing is shooting people at the movie theater. I actually do look around and just think to myself, if anything happens, what is the best way out of here? Who might that person be? Is anybody acting strange? Do you find yourself doing that when you're out and about in public?
Absolutely. I find myself doing it all the time. And I think my wife thinks I'm paranoid because she notices that I do it. But yes, I do find myself doing that all the time out in public.
Let me interject there too. My wife is an amazing lady and has been with me for a long, long time. I have two separate forms of behavior. If I'm with my wife and I'm going in somewhere to eat, we're going to get a table to the closest to the nearest exit. That's just real cut and dry, and she knows that.
Right.
If I'm going out to eat by myself, I will probably bury myself into the restaurant to where I have the biggest field, widest field of view. But I've trained my wife, and please don't be haters out there. I've trained my wife. For years and years and years, she has known that if I look at her and simply say, go, she is to run out the nearest exit and not come back until I come to find her. Now, this was all well and good until about 10 years ago. I'm a guy, and do we ever really believe somebody believes what we're training or, you know, is actually going to do what we asked them to do? So we went to dinner one night about 10 years ago, and she had just finished her salad, and I looked at her and said, go. And she turned white, dropped her fork, and ran out of the restaurant, and I was proud of her. She proved to me that she understood her training and that she could do it. But I'll tell you, I went out to congratulate her, and that wasn't fun.
No, I'm sure it wasn't. I'm sure it wasn't.
I did the fire drill on her, yeah. It was like 3 weeks before she would speak to me again. But the crazy thing is, to this day, still to this day, 11 years later, every 3 or 4 weeks I'll look at her and I'll ask her, do you remember what go means?
Yep. You amazing. Know, because, absolutely right. I find myself, and I know, Matt, I know exactly what you mean about paranoid, but I'll tell you, over the past few years, that paranoid label more and more has become less and less a negative. And I say it's not paranoid, it's being prepared, because, you know, you just never know. You know, when you hear about these things happening, like in the Aurora shooting, people thought it was part of the movie. And you would have likely thought that at a midnight showing of Batman. And, you know, it's just one of those things where I'm always saying, I don't want to be the guy just sitting there taking it. I said, I want at the very least to know that I went down at least trying to protect myself. And so it's just kind of interesting that you guys both say that, because I'm the same way. I'm always looking at people's hands. You know, they used to tell us in the military, very few people shoot with their feet or their ears or their nose or their mouth. Most people use their hands. And just looking for people that are acting strangely and stuff like that. Let's move from the bank to my little plot of paradise here, in right off County Line Road in New Braunfels, Texas, Republic thereof. And I'm sleeping at night. This did not happen. I'm just using it as a situation, Chris. I wake up in the middle of the night and see somebody stealing the Ford F-150 that is parked in front of my house, which belongs to my father-in-law who lives next door. Is it legal for me to go outside and draw down on said perpetrator?
Let me ask two questions. Has your father-in-law asked you to watch over his truck?
Not explicitly.
Because if he's asked you to watch over his property, and this goes to his house as well, then you have the legal duty to watch over that. I can't answer that question. It's not a yes or no, just like being in court many times, the truth
right.
falls between the two. Number one, what's your property worth? Because here's the deal. If you fire, hit the guy, and kill that gentleman that's trying to steal your vehicle, and in answer to your question, yes, that's theft during the nighttime. You would probably have a legal right to do that. In San Antonio, you might get away with it. In Austin, there's all sorts of cockney that would be raised against it.
Yeah.
But what's the property worth? Because when you go out to hire an attorney to defend yourself in the legal proceedings over that shooting or that deadly force incident, you're going to have to plop down a deposit of $50,000. You're going to have to come up with 50 grand, give it to them before they'll even start looking at it.
Wow. Well, good advice again. Hey, folks, we're visiting with Matthew Spalton. He's the president of the McQueenie Gun Club, and Chris Siegel. He's the range master and instructor. We're talking about situational awareness, and we're going to talk about a few more right after this. Let me take this next one to Matt. Let's say, Matt, you and your wife are out at the roadhouse having a really good time, and there's somebody else who's had maybe too much of a good time. It's a gentleman who is in the parking lot physically assaulting his wife, and I mean really laying her out physically. And, you know, you try to be a gentleman. Hey, let's cool off. Let's take it easy. There's no law enforcement around. He becomes even more enraged and starts to come at you. Are you allowed to take out your handgun and order him to stop?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, depends how close he is and that kind of stuff. I'd probably start with defensive posture before I just threw down on the guy. But absolutely, you can do that. You have the right to do that.
So you can basically defend somebody else or yourself if the situation calls for it.
That's correct.
Interesting. All right. To you, Chris, I'm at a public event. There's someone who's acting strange, pulls a knife and starts threatening people with it. How would you react?
Yes, you do have the right to protect yourself and third person or persons. You can pull your weapon as a threat of force. If he continues to advance on you, you can use that. You can escalate deadly force. Now, if he is 15 yards away and his nearest victim is standing behind you, you're not going to want to shoot him at 15 yards, because at that point both you and the victim have other choices. You can make space by turning and running. You can put time between you. There's other actions. Basically, what I train people is, if that threat is at 7 yards or under, you need to react. Because at 7 yards or under, if you haven't developed that defensive posture, pulled out that weapon, he's inside your OODA loop, and he will be able to get to you generally before you can react, pull the weapon, and defend yourself, because he's inside that loop. It takes the average person a second to a second and a half to react, even if they know something's going to happen. And every time you add another stimuli on top of that, noise, sound, light, whatever, you're going to tack on about another third of a second.
Wow. You talked to me about something that I thought was very interesting, and I do think about this. Do both of you gentlemen carry your handguns when you go to church? I'm just curious.
Yes, I do. All the time.
You do.
I'm a director of music at my church. I'm on stage constantly during praise and worship and services, and I am always armed.
Awesome, because I got to tell you, I'm not hoping it happens. I'm surprised it hasn't happened more often, where you have people gathering peacefully. These perpetrators typically looking for easy targets, it seems. There does seem to be quite a bit of correlation lately with targeting Christians. And so I was just something I was curious about.
Since January 1st of 1999, there have been 951 deadly force incidences in houses of worship. 34.5% of those have resulted in death of others.
Never knew that.
Yep. I'm huge into church security. And while we're at it, let me get on the bandwagon. The state of Texas tells churches that if they haven't, you can have an organized security team of experienced personnel out of your congregants as long as they're unarmed. But the minute you have that, say if you want to organize a security team for your church, that's fine as long as they don't carry any armament. The minute one of them carries an arm or puts on it, or you get a CHL holder who has his weapon, at that point you run afoul of Texas law, which is absolutely ridiculous, because CHL law gives you the right to protect yourself or a third person.
Well, it's not the first, last, or only ridiculous law that is on the books. Chris, I do want to ask you, because I've got absolutely no problem. Let's just be honest. When we talk about guns and gun rights and gun safety, it does become a political issue for a lot of people, especially these knuckleheads who expect a law is going to stop some. I mean, there's laws against speeding. There's laws against texting while you're driving, and people break those all the time. But has it been your experience that when people responsibly use their concealed handgun to prevent a crime or protect themselves or their family, those things are underreported, aren't they?
Correct. Yeah, there's a huge disparity. And if you look at the Department of Justice and the FBI reports, all these things on gun ownership and crime, in every instance, the liberals are wrong. Every instance where you have a CHL, crime rates go down, rapes go down, assaults go down, burglaries go down. In every freaking instance, the more armed, responsibly armed, because Texas CHL holders are only accountable for less than one fifth of 1% of crime. Less than a fifth of a percent of crime can be assigned to CHL holders. As a whole. And this covers all ethnicities, all everything, all the denominators. These people are responsible. Because you have to remember, when this program first started, you were at about $1,000, $1,500 if you were going to be a CHL holder.
Right. That's absolutely right. Hey, listen.
Go ahead.
Our last thoughts as we're running up against the time here. First to you, Matt. Finally, what is your, if you could just give someone just a nugget of advice, what would be some of your advice for people that have obtained their CHL about situational awareness? You heard Chris talking about when he's at the restaurant. Is there like a special tip you want to leave with people?
I'd say just be, be aware of your surroundings. Like I said, my wife thinks I'm paranoid, but she's got her CHL too, and she just, not to bash her, but she just sometimes just doesn't seem like she pays attention to what's going on around her. I just say, just situational awareness and training.
Training, just, that's it.
Absolutely.
And Chris? Chris, any final thoughts on situational awareness for people that have taken the responsibility to get their CHL?
You have to train, you have to study, because a lot of what goes into situational awareness is not common knowledge. You were in the military, you probably studied John Boyd's OODA loop. I don't know if they taught it in Army. I know the Marine Corps does. Threat vectors, Wyatt's protocol, fight, assess, scan, top off. There's so much that goes into the geometry of the dance, let's just call it the dance, that you have to have that big, good, solid foundation. If you have a foundation, then you have the knowledge to overcome the threat. But with situational awareness also becomes a change in mindset. I have seen an officer die at the side of the road of something he should have been able to walk to his unit and drive himself to the hospital for. And I've also seen the reverse of that. Somebody that was so badly torn up that they never should have made it to the hospital, but, a year later they're back on duty.
Right.
It goes to mindset. You're very aware of that. I know you were from your experiences in the military.
Right. Absolutely. Hey, folks, you've been listening to The Vigilant American, brought to you by the McQueenie Gun Club, firearms training, and, of course, the best-looking indoor range you're ever going to see. I want to thank Matt Spalton, the president of the McQueenie Gun Club, and Chris Siegel, the range master and instructor. You guys, a ton of knowledge, and the great thing is we'll be back here next Saturday if we forgot to mention anything. Thank you guys so much for sharing your expertise and experience with us today.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
All right. Hey, folks, don't forget, it's a rainy day. Not much else you can do. Go on over and see our friends at the McQueenie Gun Club. And while you're there, find out what distinguishes Benelli from the other firearms. Benelli has total confidence in its products and backs them all with an industry-leading 10-year warranty. You can go see them. You can shoot them there at the range. And more importantly, if you are thinking about becoming one of the people that obtains their CHL, you will find the best classes and the best instructors about everything. It's not just about pulling the trigger and hitting the target. There's so much more that goes into it. And the ongoing training that's available for you at the McQueenie Gun Club is simply unparalleled in our community. Hey, folks, if you're going out to McQueenie Gun Club today, don't forget, half the range fees are going to go to our friends at the Heidi Search Center. And until next we speak, my name is Jason Dias, and we'll talk to you all next week. Bye now.
That's all, folks.